Good afternoon. Hello, everyone. This is Abdullah Samir. And I'm joined by Zach, Abdul Razak, and he's from Saudi. And Abdul Razak, well, first of all, it's been quite a whirlwind. You just went public yesterday. Is that correct?
Yeah, I just went public yesterday, and the whole thing, like the amount of attention this has gotten, has been really, really overwhelming.
Yeah,
and I'm really happy about this. I've been planning to, and I really want to bring attention to all of the important issues, with human rights over there, and being able to have that platform, especially that early on, is such an honor.
So,
and
going back,
I'm very
to...
grateful to all of you, you and Yasmin Muhammad especially.
So going back to, let's step back a bit, and while we just wait for people to join, you are from Saudi Arabia, you are now in Germany. How long have you been in Germany now?
I've been in Germany for about 3 months.
And what did you come for?
So originally I came doing a language course. So I had a valid Schengen visa. I wanted to do a language course, apply to study next year. But as time went on, I just came to realize that, the way I was living before, not feeling safe, not knowing what's going to happen to me tomorrow, when I was there, I really didn't feel safe. I've had some people tell me from my family, because we've had some, I guess, political issues with the government, that I would be under being politically active would be especially risky for me.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I would say something or post something or whatever, I have to, like I would panic. I would look over my shoulder all the time, not knowing, is my family gonna find out? What's my family gonna do? Am I gonna get subjected to, a violence or shunning or, about to leave the country?
So let's go back to what's life like?
Just feeling completely unsafe about my future. And once I came here and had a plan to go back, I came to know what freedom is and, what it's like to not worry about those things. Being able to say what I want to do and nobody's going to go after me. I'm not going back, It's that simple.
So what's life like in Saudi Arabia? So you're born in Saudi, is it?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you're from
Saudi
family, and you born in Saudi, grew up in Saudi. What was life like in Saudi, and how did you end up having doubts in Islam? What's life like, first of all, and then how did you end up where you are now?
Okay, so. What's life like? I'd say within my family specifically, very, very fundamentalist, very strict, not having any kind of, I guess, music, satellite television, normal, even kids' shows.
Is your family Salafi? Are they
Salafi? Yes.
Okay. Okay. So
definitely.
So no music. So even in Canada, I know some families like that. My own family, in here in Canada, we used to have no music in the house, limited TV. I didn't even want a TV. I considered TV was from Shaitan or something. So that's the kind of life we were growing up with.
Yeah.
But it was worse than that because,
Exactly. Did you
go ahead.
guys listen to the jihadists and Nasheeds?
No. We used to listen to like Zayn, like English, like Zayn Bika, Dawood Wansby, Yusuf Islam, Cat Stevens. We used to listen to like Dean, a little bit of, Dean Squad and, the popular like pop music, Islamic pop music. But even then,
Islamic pop music. I have never come across that. What I've come across are like the extremely bloodthirsty type thing, like really hardcore. But weren't you raised a smiley?
So I'm not talking about when how I was raised. Like I was raised in a very liberal, very easygoing family. My mom was Sunni Muslim. My dad was Ismaili, but they had no issues with like we grew up in Kenya and it was very easygoing for us. So me and my brother we used to. My dad was very strict. He's died now, but he was very, very strict on us because he wanted us to focus on a school. But that was the only reason. So he wouldn't let us play video games during the week. But like, I mean, my family. When I say my family, I mean me and my wife and my kids. That's what I'm talking about now. So I converted to Sunni Islam, when I was in high school, and then I just deep dived right into it. Right. So I probably. I don't think we because we don't speak Arabic, this Islamic music I'm talking about, it's like, Yusuf Islam, who's Cat Stevens, he was a famous singer. He converted to Islam and he sings like kids' songs. Dawood Wansby is another Canadian white guy that converted to Islam and he sings like, again, they're mostly kids' songs. And then you have Dean Squad, which wasn't, I didn't really listen to them back then. And there's also a Malaysian group. I'm trying to remember the name now, Indonesian group, and they had beautiful songs. So they use a lot of instruments, but they don't use like wind instruments or something. And some of them use no instruments. And now the rage is to use like simulated instruments. So they digitally record like poof, 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 and stuff. And it sounds exactly the same because they digitally edit it. But technically some people think that's halal, even though the real music, it's so silly. So anyways, so you grew up in this very religious family. No music. They used to put on jihadist nasheeds, stuff like that. No TV allowed. So what did you do for fun?
I guess when it came to TV entertainment, that kind of thing, we had like the alternatives. So I do remember like some of the earliest things were really violent jihadist propaganda films and but yeah, I guess more fun would be the Islamic cartoons. I don't know how familiar most people are with those. Just I guess heavily edited. I guess most women are cut out. Instrumental music. They edit in a lot of like Islamic stuff.
So that's what you did for fun growing. Okay, what other stuff do you do for fun in Saudi? Like movie, you can't go to, do they have, you guys go to movie theaters?
No, they just opened the first movie theater in like April of this year. So no, not at all. Not at all. We like yeah, like movies. We didn't watch movies at all. Like not until I grew up. As I grew up and the culture, I guess the whole culture, like the culture in general changed. My family became a lot more relaxed about the whole thing, right? So yeah, as I grew up, say And I was like, well, I don't know, 14, 15, maybe even later. We kind of indulged the whole like watching movies, listening to some music, that kind of thing.
Okay. Is that only for you?
Otherwise, when it came to fun, like I played a lot of video games, violence in video games, so a lot of first person shooters,
Kulu halal.
growing up. Yeah, that's completely halal. It's even like, yeah, like
It's
encouraged. I,
sunnah. You get
yeah,
70, you
definitely.
70 rewards for every moment you play Counter Strike and you train fi sabilillah, right? It's good.
Yeah.
You're playing video games, but your intention is for Allah, so it is a blessed video game.
I remember this one time I was playing Battlefield and I overheard my mom talking to my uncle about hey, should he be playing this? Oh no, this is really good for him. It's gonna train him to be a mujahid, so.
But the Saudi government doesn't like jihadis.
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So yeah, that's why I know some people who have gotten in trouble because of that. It's like it's I would say that it's definitely not like the mainstream view. It's not particularly popular. Certainly not the like the kinds of heavy jihadist propaganda that I was exposed to was not something that would be like sold over the counter like everywhere. But at the same time there is this I feel like there's this culture of being a secularist is about the worst thing that you can be, and so even like hardcore Islamists, people who are who have very much anti-government ideas, do have a lot of leeway, at least in like social circles, to say what they want, and they don't get very much pushback, but secularists never speak when like someone gives out a secular idea. Hey, maybe we shouldn't have religion and government, that kind of thing. That's like prior to it being a legal risk, it's a huge social taboo. And so no, nobody goes near that.
Oh, talking about secularism. Just a shout out to Bubbly Babs. Thank you for the $20 donation. Here she said, "Good luck, Zach. Atheist Amino is rooting for you. Be safe." So
Wait,
you,
who's that?
somebody in the comments, Bubbly Babs L said, gave a $20 donation and said, "Good luck, Zach. Atheist Amino is rooting for
Bubbly
you. Be safe."
Babs.
Bubbly Babs, yeah. So going
I will be fucked if if that person's like my friend and I forgot about them.
don't worry.
I'm sure I know them though. I love Atheist Amino. Those guys are
Oh,
awesome.
you know Atheist Amino. Oh, okay,
Yeah.
nice.
Oh
Okay.
yeah, I'm on there.
Nice, making some connections there. So going back to life in Saudi. Life in Saudi as a child, like you said, in your family, it was very fundamentalist. But as time went by, they became a little bit more easygoing, and they allowed a little bit of music, a little bit of TV,
Yeah,
and what?
most of that was, I guess after I became an atheist. I became an atheist when I was 13.
Oh
So,
wow! Whoa!
yeah.
Whoa! Hold on! You became an atheist when you were 13. How did that happen?
Well, I spent a lot of time by myself.
Oh, wow.
I mean, I'm a, yeah. It's like not really having a social life, being incredibly awkward and being like reclusive. Also, having something of an obsessive personality, I guess. So when I'm interested in a topic, I sometimes just can't stop, reading about it or watching documentaries and all that.
So you have access. Okay, so there's no movies, but you had access to the internet and you had access to YouTube. And so what were you? Okay, so
The
till
internet.
June. Wow, so it's 5 years ago then, because you're 18 now. Okay, so what were you reading? What were you listening to? How did you get educated?
Okay, so I'd say it was a gradual process, but I guess a couple of years before that, I guess developed something of an obsession, or I really strong interest in like theology debates, and at some point that got into evolution debates.
But damn, 13. So you were actually, what were
I mean,
you
I got
studying?
into that like 10 or 11.
Wow. So you grew up and you went to a private school, an Arabic school. And what did how did they teach you science, and how did they teach you evolution and stuff like that?
I mean, it was mostly English.
Okay.
So we had an American biology curriculum.
Oh, nice. Wait, but this was a private school then, not a public school.
It's a private school.
Oh, okay.
I remember my first introduction to evolution in school was I okay that was in like 8th grade, so that was I think shortly after I became an atheist. The textbooks were American, and so they did have a, I guess, mandatory section on evolution. They like we were taught about it, but it was always prefaced by, "Hey, by the way, this is not true."
And did you know they were just saying that for the sake of they had to say that?
What do you mean?
Like the teacher was obligated by the government to say, this is not true, but we're going to teach anyways.
Oh no, the teacher was very passionate about that.
So why did they
This
say it's not true
about
then?
no, the teacher was very passionate about it not being true. But I guess as part of the American school book, as part of the curriculum, it was part of what we were taught. So, it was in our tests and all of that. So we had some understanding of evolution, but well, for one thing, we completely skipped the part when it came to human evolution. The other parts we were taught and told were not true. So
Which parts are not true?
the other parts
Like, so.
animals, plants, that kind of thing, natural selection,
I'm confused. The teaching you evolution, and at the same time, they're saying this is not true.
basically I don't understand why that was exactly. I think it was like a
It's government
part
intervention,
of the Yeah, well, not the Saudi government. I guess the accrediting American organization. You know, because we were taught with American books.
Interesting, because I've heard of on the radio how in Saudi they have like these Muwatta kind of people come into the school, and if like for example if there's Valentine's Day's decorations or anything like that, they'll like rip it down. Even one example I heard, there was like people were just putting up like little huts, and they cut it. They're like, you can't put that. And so they do definitely get and intervene even in the private schools.
I mean, we didn't really need much intervention because the school that I went to, despite it like being primarily taught in English, was extremely religious. You know, my parents were like they wanted me to get a good English education, but they also wanted me to get a really good religious education as well. So the religious studies over there, they were quite intense. We had to memorize a lot of Quran, a lot of we even had, I think, in some ways more than some of the other schools, because we were taught religious studies in both Arabic and English.
So
One of like yeah, it's not like you didn't get the impression that it was a more moderate school where you might get like Valentine's Day hearts or that kind of thing. No. It was a place where, you know, our religious studies teacher at like he, you know talking about how you know nothing being wrong with slavery, or when I asked him about marital rape, you know, denying its existence entirely because consent is not a thing in Islam, as you probably know.
Interesting. So at this young age, it's amazing that you were in a religious school. You're in a country that's completely Islam, 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 and still you ended up like leaving Islam. That's amazing. Like I'm still stunned at your story. Like for me, I was in my 30s when I found out about all these things.
I don't know. I think it mostly has a lot to do with me just being a very reclusive and introverted person. You know, not really having friends, not like
Were the teachers in your school
I guess
Muslim or not
peer
Muslim?
pressure wasn't a thing. They were Muslim, like pretty much all of them were Muslims, with like very, very few exceptions.
What did they teach you about non-Muslims? Did they have any sort of what was the kind of, because what was the perspective towards non-Muslims? Do we hate non-Muslims? Do we wish good for them and want them to be guided?
Oh no, we hate them. That's
Oh.
I'm thinking actually like one of the main things that I wanted to do with my YouTube channel before I started it was to get my hands on the religious studies curriculums, like the government issued books, and just review them. Show yeah, because the things in there are really, really extreme. And it's, you know, it's not like when you know what people are taught over there, you wouldn't be surprised at the fact that you know, a lot of the world's international terrorists come from Saudi Arabia. Because the problem starts very early on.
Right. So I'm just going to take a second to pause, and I'm sharing Abdul Razak, his YouTube channel. I just sent the link. If you can please subscribe there. He's going to be creating more content. Are you going to be creating content in English or Arabic or both? What's the idea?
Both.
Okay, amazing.
Both. I'm hoping to reach, you know, all kinds of audiences, and any video that's like either in English or in Arabic, I'm I plan on definitely making subtitles to it.
Amazing. Okay.
So that everyone else can watch it.
So you were growing up, you were very introverted, and you were constantly studying. What material did you study that helped you to see through Islam?
I'm sorry?
Like what content, like, was the final kind of straw that made you realize that Islam is false?
Okay, if you just want the final straw, I will say the Quran.
But specifically, what made you change your perspective on that? Like, did you look up any popular YouTubers at that time, like the Masked Arab, or was it like books you read? You know, you heard about Raif Badawi. You mentioned him in your other video. Who was talking about these things that made you kind of pique your interest? Or you just online on your own? You just looked up everything.
I would say that, you know, the writings, but more so the, like videos of Richard Dawkins online have helped me a lot. Through that, I was like able to admire the way that man spoke even when I was religious, which is like weird. Even now, I can't really wrap my head around it, but just being so articulate that way.
I hear that a lot, actually. Did you read his God Delusion?
Yeah, I read the God Delusion.
How did you get it? How did you get a copy of it?
Oh, I got it online.
Oh, you got it online. Yeah. Okay. So even though the whole world was kind of like controlled around you, you had this little gateway to the outside world, which was the internet.
The internet. That is something that, I don't think I would be where I am now without the internet. And that's why, by the way, like every time someone, say attacks social media or the internet, I just take it very personally.
Yeah.
You have no idea how much good this can do. It's not a drug. It's not an addiction. It's a tool for enlightenment, and the world is changing because of it.
Yeah,
and it deserves your respect.
There's definitely people who are addicted to the internet, and there is like social issues as well around them. But for you, I think this was like you used it.
I'm talking about treating it as a problem primarily. I see it as a solution to a lot of our problems.
Absolutely. So I'm here speaking with Zach from Saudi Arabia. He's currently in Germany seeking asylum there, and this is I think the first time you're ever speaking about this, and you're just 18 years old, right?
Yeah.
Amazing. You are a gem. I converted to Islam at 21, so no, around 18. That's when that age is quite an age, I think, where people are, you know, also doing a lot of research. But in your case, you started very early.
Yeah, even you converted to Sunni Islam, or
to Sunni Islam.
Ismailis aren't real Muslims, are they?
Well, the one interpretation of Islam, I used to think like you when I was Muslim, but I don't say that anymore. And we can go into that later. That your story is much more interesting. Let's continue talking about that. So okay, so you found your way.
That was a joke, by the way.
Okay, so you found your way to Islam. Now you were discussing this with. Did you discuss this with anybody at all? Like what you thought about Islam? Now you left Islam.
Yeah, actually, I well, at first, yeah, as I left Islam, I did have a couple of close friends. One of them, actually, also became an atheist around the same time, and yeah, the other is still a fundamentalist Muslim, but also one of my best friends. but yeah, over time, I did get in contact and like speak my voice more in a lot of ways.
But in Saudi, did you talk to anybody? Like, did you talk to your family, your parents, anybody at all? Your teachers? Was it too risky to do that? Were you scared to tell anybody?
Well, I talked about, I guess, liberal values in general. Mm-hmm. There was this one period of time where I was very insistent on trying to convince my Islamic studies teacher that about the reality of evolution.
Oh wow!
Which did not go well. But
what are the consequences? Like, if someone would have like reported you to the police or something, like, could you have like been arrested for saying these things or challenging? Actually, one of my friends in Saudi went to jail because the imam told on him. Like, he called the cops. So this guy actually took his mobile phone and threw it in the drain, and they arrested him. They put him in jail because of what he was saying. He got into a fight with the imam.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also one of the reasons I decided that there is no way I'm going back is that I have done some things when I was there. I have said some things publicly and privately and to people I probably should not have talked to about this kind of thing.
Oh, wow.
That can get me in very serious trouble. Like, for example, people are probably wondering why my Twitter account was only created like a few weeks ago. The reason is that a number of more distant, more liberal family members talked to me and warned me about, hey, If you keep those posts you have on Facebook, on Twitter, you will get arrested.
Wow.
So stop doing this. I just ended up deleting my Twitter account because when you're on Twitter, it's really hard to stay away from politics, and I get passionate, and sometimes I say stuff. With Facebook, I mostly just deleted my posts. Although for a long period of time I did have Raif Badawi as my background, which could have landed me in trouble. Yeah.
Jeez. Oh my god. So here you are in Saudi, and how did you get permission to study overseas?
Yeah, my family is pretty much okay with it. I learned German on my own. I did my certificate back in Saudi Arabia. I did my applications. I registered at that language school afterwards because, I wasn't yet studying at the university, and And I also went to work for a few months. I'm not gonna count how many now, but a few months. I saved up some money, and
Wow.
it took a lot of convincing on my part to my family. But at first they were completely opposed to the idea with time, and like my father was I guess when he saw the effort I was doing, he even supported me in it, like financially,
Wow.
a little bit. So yeah.
So you weren't planning to stay here, though. You weren't. That was never
Not
your plan,
not
right?
I mean not at the beginning. Not at the beginning. I was like, okay, let's see how things go. I'll just take this course, maybe go back, apply for university, go next year, that kind of
Okay, someone's
thing. But
asking, why did you choose Germany?
why did I choose Germany? Okay, so for one things, or for one thing, they have some of the best bioinformatics bachelor's programs.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, so that's what I want to study. And the other thing is that I like no one's really gonna support me financially, like at least over time. And so this is like one of the very few places that I thought I could really manage in studying and working and supporting myself.
Wow. So what changed? What made
Yeah.
you decide to stay? Like what triggered you to make that big decision that, okay, I'm not going back now?
Yeah, so I guess it wasn't a sudden decision. It was very much a gradual one. When I first left Saudi Arabia, I had a transit in Paris, and so I kind of met that Chinese guy, and like we kind of walked all around Paris together, and at one point he asked me, "Oh, are you Muslim?" And then I gave him my standard answer, and like that like when I would normally be asked that, so I wouldn't get my head chopped off. Oh yeah, I'm Muslim. I believe this and that and that. And then like 5 seconds later, I turned to him and said, "You know, actually, now I'm in Paris. I can tell you the truth. No, I'm an atheist. I'm not a Muslim."
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh
Yeah.
my God.
And
It's
so, yeah.
a lot of people, even most ex-Muslims here, are so used to like responding that way that they're not sure how to like tell people. Even believe it or not, like it's understandable that you're feeling like this intrepidation to like say that. But even in Canada, 99% of ex-Muslims are in the closet. Like I don't mean
Yeah.
99% scientifically, but like I can count on my fingers the number of people I know that are publicly ex-Muslim, and I can count like hundreds I know, hundreds that I've spoken to, that I've either online or in real life. They're not ready to come out yet. They're not comfortable in telling their family. Some of them are even adults in their 40s, in maybe in not just in Canada, but in Britain. And they don't want to come out to the family. They don't want to lose those friendships, those lifelong friendships. So it's a very, very scary step, isn't it? Like to come out.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I know, Like, I've talked to a number of people in like Europe and North America. When I was in Saudi Arabia, ex-Muslims who, would not go public about it, and that was something that would drive me completely insane. Like, you're in a free country. What the fuck are you doing? This is all I want in life. This is all I want to do. I want to express myself and I want to be free. And you have that opportunity and you just don't because you want people to like you. Fuck everyone else. just, yeah, it doesn't, yeah.
It doesn't jive with you. I think it's there's also people I've met that they don't really care about the movement. They just want to move on with their life in a sense. And so for some of us like you, it's very personal and you want to help people and you want to be a part of that change. But for other people, they're not necessarily, I let's say they're not high functioning individuals. They're not very public individual, even though like you're an introvert yourself. I'm also an introvert in some ways, and it took a lot for me to come on camera. I before I left Islam, I never did come on camera before, saying, "Oh, I believe in Islam" or whatever. I did little khutbas here and there, but I like Friday prayer sermons, but I never like I didn't like being in the limelight, and I think you're the same way. But we did it because we felt that it was important enough what we had to say. But some people they just can't overcome that. And I even can think of some people I know, like one guy that comes to mind is the apostate prophet that he got a lot of anxiety, and it's not an easy thing to do. You get a lot of hatred, you get a lot of like you have to have a super tough skin to do this publicly. And some people they just cannot, they just don't want to lose those relationships with their parents, for example, or this, they might not even lose them. They might not lose those relationships. The mom and dad might be like, not like in your case necessarily, but it might be like, okay, fine. So you don't believe in Islam. I'm sad, but it's your choice, right? And but some of them might be like, I'm never talking to you ever again. And they might not be strong enough, in this situation.
Or I'm gonna cut your head off.
Yeah, we're lucky not have that. That situation over here, no one's chopping off any heads over here. But you definitely,
I'm sure I've read some stories and not gonna
in general, I mean, yeah, okay. So isn't it a situation that it's much much worse for women in Saudi Arabia, especially if you leave Islam?
Yeah, why don't I answer your like the previous questions
Sure.
you asked
Go
me?
ahead. Go
And
ahead. Yeah.
so first, like when it came to coming with my decision on not going back, after this experience, I just had a lot exactly like this, and
You mean where you were able to like express yourself openly and say, well, I actually don't believe. Like
And
it felt good, right?
it felt amazing. And other than that, it's not like there are things like it's not just about me. Just interacting with amazing, tolerant, and free people. Seeing like people being able to express themselves how they want, the LGBTQ people. I have some like having some gay friends, atheist friends over there who still can't get out,
In
and
Saudi?
Just thinking, hey, they don't deserve this life over there, and somebody needs to say something. Something's got to change. We need to do something about this,
Yeah.
And like, hey, what we have here is it's not just something that's nice. It's not a privilege. It's a right. It's something that everyone should have all over the world. And yeah, I think everyone, should have all of those freedoms everywhere. And this is something that really drove me. And when you asked me, wasn't it frightening to do this? It's definitely very frightening. Honestly, one of the main reasons that I actually had that that whole speech written out since before Christmas.
So,
And
you're referring to the speech that you made in your first YouTube video where
yes.
you said, "This is my message to the Saudi
Yes,
government, to the
yes.
world." Okay, continue. Yeah.
Yeah, it was done before Christmas. And one of the main reasons that it took so long was that I was completely nerve-wracked, and I was terrified, and I was emotionally very vulnerable about that. And so but you know what? As terrifying as this is, it's not as terrifying as the prospect of going back there and not knowing whether or not I'm going to be safe, or whether I'm going to prison, or what my family might find out and what they might do to me. I just don't know. And so that's way more terrifying. So I'll take this option.
Did you tell your family before you made that statement in any way, or did you just make the statement?
I just made this statement. I do plan on telling them at some point.
So they haven't, you haven't heard from them yet.
I have not been talking to them yet, for a while. It doesn't seem like they're gonna come across it. It's not like they follow ex-Muslim
Oh,
atheist pages or anything like
okay.
that. So, it's probably gonna be a good while. I'm probably gonna find the courage to tell them before they find out on their own.
Yeah,
Yeah.
how's that gonna be? How's that gonna go?
I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I might just send them the video and see how they react.
It's scary. It's even more scary telling your family members, isn't it? Like telling your dad and mom, and they're probably gonna cry, right? Like they're not.
It's definitely quite horrible. It's really, really heartbreaking, just thinking about it that way, because you know that those people are not evil people. They're not psychopaths. They love me, and they love they love their children. And as incredibly religious as they are, I think they have really big hearts, and no matter what happens, they wouldn't do anything to intentionally and directly harm me. I mean, I say intentionally and directly because there are many ways that they could in unintentionally or indirectly harm me if I was over there. It's quite heartbreaking, knowing. I mean, it was part of my statement that, I know what it's like to know that anyone who disagrees with me is going to, burn in hell forever, and that's fucking terrifying. That's emotionally horrible. And I just feel like, as horrible as the situation is, and as
Are you going to be able to see them again? Your family, your parents?
I mean, yeah. Well, what I'm saying is that as bad as the situation is, first of all, I need to watch out for my own safety and my own well-being and my own freedoms. Okay? And other than that, I need to watch out for the safety and freedom of my friends and my relatives who are still over there. Okay? And who are like over time I have known like some of them are more liberal, some of them are even atheists. Some of them are LGBT. It's quite like just having family and friends over there that are just so just in that position. You know, this is something that I have to do, and as painful as it is for them, it's important. You know, that's the yeah, that's what I have to say about that.
Yeah, probably they're gonna go to the seven stages of grief, which is like anger, denial. You know, there's a whole spectrum of emotions that people go to when something like this happens.
Yeah.
And they're gonna change. They're gonna be like, yeah, one day they're gonna be mad at you. The next day they're gonna be crying, and it's a very difficult situation.
It's not like they had no idea. Like, honestly, I wasn't that good at hiding it. I mean, yeah. There was this you know, this time when my father, you know, who woke me up for the morning prayer, Fajr.
Budget, yeah.
We went to pray, and after we finished praying, he just kind of, I guess cornered me in a way, and he's like, you know, he pretty much asked me like, do you actually believe in Islam? Do you believe in God? Are you an atheist? Are you, you know, because of how different my ideas are, and you know, probably not doing as good a job as I should have, and keeping my mouth shut, and you know, being threatened with, you know, like a travel ban, that kind of thing. I was terrified. At the time, you know, I actually thought that he was, you know, going to ban me from traveling at the time, and you know, I might be placed in a much worse situation because he knows. But yeah, like just went on a long drive, and I called one of my friends, and just panicking, and what am I gonna do? Am I just what if I take a flight to New Zealand right now and like run away? And yeah, I was completely wrecked at the time, but yeah, I kind of decided against it. My father kind of calmed down, and it turned out that I had gotten kind of good at bullshitting. I had like, you know, the like I like the way I lied to him was apparently convincing enough.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was one time I was like more impressed with myself than like, I was able to do more than I'd given myself credit for. I thought it completely failed. I thought he didn't believe me and what I said and everything I like all the stories I made up. but apparently he did, and I was like able to get out. And so yeah, like this is to give you an idea that they weren't completely in the dark about it, and yeah, like some of them, like I straight up told them. So, like that, I'm an atheist, but I think activism is a different level of disappointment. So,
yeah, it's people that are probably saying, like, you know, thinking, you know, why lie? But I mean, what choice do you have over there? Like,
yeah, I don't feel guilty about lying. Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna lie if that's what I have to do to survive. That's what I had to do, and that's what I did, and I'm not sorry about that, you know?
Yeah, it's easy to judge someone that's not in that situation, right? Like, it's without actually being in that environment, it's hard to understand for people. So that's kind of the point of this conversation.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
To show people, like how tough it is. Like look what happened to Raif Badawi. Can you just quickly tell people what happened there? You might know a little bit better than me.
Okay, so Raif Badawi was a Saudi Arabian activist. He advocated
secularism.
Yeah, secularism in Saudi Arabia, basically. He had a website. He was kind of a big figure at one point. He had some TV interviews from what I've seen. I guess the more treasonous content was posted on his website, Free Saudi Liberals.
Did he have his name on the website?
Yeah, he was pretty public about it, as far as I can tell. I mean, I never personally was there. I kind of found out about it after. Yeah, I remember that happened in 2012. So,
was it in the news? Anything like? Do they broadcast this?
Yeah. We like kind of knew about it when it happened. But you know, what I'm saying is that I wasn't active in the secularist community at the time at all. After that, he was arrested, and he was originally sentenced to death.
Wow.
Yeah.
But what did he say exactly?
I think one of the well, I'm not going to give you exact quotes, but I'm going to give you paraphrases.
Okay.
One of the things that they pinned on him was him posting something about, you know, the death sentence or beheading is a barbaric relic of the past,
The thing that that upsets me because that's different than saying, I don't know, it upsets me a lot, because that's different than saying Muhammad isn't a prophet and he's a liar.
Yeah,
if you're saying, you know, we don't need, okay, like, especially if you, like, I have an article on the same topic where I said that, like, stoning people to death doesn't solve anything. Like,
yeah.
That's not how you treat adultery. Like, there's other ways to help people have happy marriages,
yeah,
including counseling. Like, many, like, and I actually put a vote on Twitter. Do you want your ex-wife or ex-husband to be stoned to death? Almost.
I just love how there are other ways to for a happy marriage as if this is just one of the alternatives to. Hey, you can either have a happy marriage through stoning or through counseling, your choice.
So it's not like someone can argue as a Muslim that this doesn't make sense in today's day and time. That doesn't, why is that jailworthy?
Yeah, because it's not only about completely renouncing the religion, saying, well, God doesn't exist or Muhammad wasn't a prophet. It's like even going after details of the extreme Wahhabist institution that's placed in the Saudi government, So say you go after Bukhari, or you that kind of thing. They're gonna go after you for that because, Islam to them is not just La ilaha illallah Muhammad Rasulullah. No, it comes with a really big package.
Yeah.
And things like cutting off a thief's hand, the death sentence, beheading, all of that is part of the package. And like even advocating for something like religious freedom, hey, you have the right to leave Islam if you want to. That's gonna land you in serious trouble. And those were the kinds of things that Raif Badawi would talk about. Because yeah, like I've looked into it, and yeah, I don't think he like. Yeah, he actually did not publicly leave Islam.
Wow.
He never publicly denied the prophethood of Muhammad or the existence of God or anything like that. He just opposed the current the system, the institution that's put in place.
Wow. So, I mean, this is just symptomatic of the general lack of freedom to speak, the lack of political freedom, the lack of there's no freedom whatsoever over there, pretty much, right? Like it doesn't matter whether it's even not religion related, like even politics, like you were saying, it's a system that can't be shaken. They don't want the system to.
You can't challenge the system exactly, and it's not just religion. Obviously, you say something about the royal family. I mean, yeah, and yeah, in some instances, I would say that, talking about the government and the royal family could be more dangerous to you than talking about the religion. Because here's what like the Saudi royal family, the government wants is basically control, and Islamism is just one of the means that they use to hold on to that control. I don't like the reason that the Quran is the Quran and the Hadith is considered the constitution of Saudi Arabia is not like I think like the only reason for that is because it's the best way to keep the power where it is.
Religion as is definitely used to control people and to keep them in place, because the especially like the hadith, it says, you know, to obey your leader as long as he's Muslim and as long as he's praying publicly, you can't rebel against, you know, the Quran says atiu Allah wa atiu Rasul wa ulil amri minkum, like obey Allah and the Messenger and those in authority among you. So it gives like a lot of legitimacy to the ruling class. So moving on to your new life. I mean, this is very new for you. You're seeking asylum. How are you going to survive? Like, until your money runs out. What are you going to do? What's your plans? Do you have any ideas yet?
When it comes to money, I'm not entirely sure.
What are the challenges now for you? Like, what do you need to do? First of all, you need to be granted asylum. How long do you know how long that takes? What's the process?
On average, it takes about 5 months.
Okay.
My paperwork, like for my application, is not completely finished. I'll go back to the migration office on Monday, and we'll check with them then. But yeah, I don't know. Mean, yeah. For now, I'm not entirely sure.
So yeah, there's a lot that needs to happen.
Yes.
You need to settle. You'll need to finish your studies. You're studying right now?
No.
Oh, you stopped your studies.
Yeah, I finished.
Oh, you're done. Okay, so for now you just have to wait and see before you commit to any further studies there.
Before I commit to anything. Yeah,
And then,
I was my like actually I had my original plan to like be done and go back to Saudi Arabia on the 16th of this month. So that was 3 days ago.
oh wow. So say that you are granted asylum. What
Yes.
are you going to do? What's your plans now, like your personal life? You're going to go back to studying?
I definitely want to study. As I said before, I primarily came to Germany because I think the programs here for the education do suit me, and I'm gonna be probably able to study and support myself at the same time, and so yeah, I'm hoping I can continue studying then.
Okay, sounds good. And do you have like a support network of friends now in Germany? Do you have people that you can talk to? Like, how's that?
I do have some really amazing friends who have helped me through the whole thing. Two of them I'm sure are on the like are watching us right now. So hey, Sydney and Jay, thank you so much for helping me through all of this. I really appreciate you guys. I've had a number of people over here.
And that must have had an impact on you too, right? Just seeing how, you know, going from this country where you're taught this like kind of hostile Salafi, these are the people of, you know, Darul Harb and Darul Islam,
Yes.
and these are the kafir, the cursed by Allah, this and that. And you're coming to Germany, and people are so friendly, so helpful. Like, doesn't that like, isn't that like so amazing?
Yeah, it is absolutely amazing. I mean, as I said before, I didn't. I feel like I've left this mindset such a long time ago that, I don't think about it this way. But yeah, like not feeling as if I am the enemy and just feeling like I need to yeah.
I was just waiting for
Wait,
you to finish.
no, someone's asking a really good question on the live chat.
While you're leading that, I just
Why
want to
do
say
Muslims?
thank you to Shredded for the $5 donation. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Why do
Yeah.
Muslims
Why
not
do
use toilet
Muslims
paper?
not use toilet paper? Do you want to answer that or should I?
Go ahead.
That's like as Armin Nawabi once said, that's the only thing the only good thing about Islam is that we actually wash our butts.
Yeah. So, I think we've gone through a lot. If there's any questions you guys want to ask, Zach, please feel free. We're coming close to an end. We've gone through the world story, the world journey. Zach, while we're waiting for questions, how would it have been different if you were a woman? How would this situation have been different if you were a woman?
Well, if I, yeah, I've, I don't know. I mean, it's, I mean, I definitely would not have been allowed to leave. That's one thing.
Someone's asked, oh, by the way, Doug Eason, thank you so much for your $20 donation. What is someone's asking about your background? Can you explain it?
What exactly?
What it means, the poster behind you.
Oh, okay. Okay, so this is a I guess I kind of shit. Yeah, the tape is yeah. So I designed this flag as kind of a an edit on the Saudi flag. Here it says secularism, democracy, and freedom with a pen underneath.
Yeah, that's beautiful. You made that yourself?
Yeah,
Oh, it's
on
nice.
Microsoft Paint.
Nice. Have you heard Surah Fa Kaf?
Sorry?
Have you heard of Surah Fa Kaf?
Surat Faq off?
Yeah. No, you haven't.
No, I've had I've heard of Quran al-Ilhad surah yeah I don't know there was this amazing like atheist like Quran.
Yes, that's one of the one I'm referring to. Can you answer this question? Do you have a message for closeted ex-Muslims in isolated countries like the Maldives who fear death? Do you have a message for them? Closeted ex-Muslims.
Closeted ex-Muslims in obscure countries. I mean specifically just try to bring more attention to where you are and what's happening over there because if you guys don't then nobody else will we need somebody to speak and just keep fighting and Hopefully one day we're gonna all be able to express ourselves freely.
Yeah, I would say continue to, you know, be active as safely as you can. And obviously, it might be a lifelong challenge, a lifelong journey. If you have the means to build yourself up, if life is extremely bad, like I don't know anything about the Maldives, but if life is extremely bad, you could always, you know, work hard and try to make your way into another country where there's more, you know, freedom of religion.
Yeah, definitely. Just, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's see what other questions. Do we have any other questions for you? So while we're waiting, do you have any thoughts about Rahaf Al-Qunun and what happened to her?
She is an incredible inspiration, and I think she is part, like, probably an, you know, a very important part of the change that's about to happen, revolution of ideas that we're embarking on right now. You know, first we had the murder of Jamal Khashoggi, and the whole world was outraged, and this amazing story. I'll tell you, when I, like, I've been following her story from the very first day, from the beginning, and I did not think she was gonna make it.
Oh wow.
Because I have followed a good number of other stories just like her, who did not make it.
Dina Ali, right? That's one of them.
Dina Ali, yeah. Hamza Kashghari was another one of them. There are a number of people who were sent back, being in this exact situation and sent back. And so seeing this as, I don't know, probably the first time this happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a beacon of hope. And I think it's a beginning of a major change.
Yeah.
I want to be a part of that.
I hope so. I hope that's exactly, it's not just one lucky incident. I mean, the fact that Jamal Khashoggi, it was just so recently it happened that, you know, he was killed, and
yeah,
it's still fresh in people's minds. Rahaf managed to get a hold of people that helped her. They gave her good advice to, like, lock herself in the hotel.
Yeah.
You know, not accept anyone into the room. And as she had herself locked up, you know, more and more people were getting attention to her. So I think that was part of it.
Like, her being so resourceful and being able to do all of that, is just remarkable. And I just really applaud her for that, and I hope she's an inspiration to a lot of other women and oppressed minorities over there who want to escape. Just show them that it's possible, and you can speak your mind. And after this, it seems very unlikely that the next girl that gets goes to Thailand is going to be sent back, because there are people who have been sent back from I'm thinking of Malaysia.
She would have been sent back for sure if she didn't block herself off.
Yeah.
Like that. Like, he was.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's, it seems very unlikely that the Thai government is going to, send back the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and here's one problem with people trying to escape Saudi Arabia. If you're doing it like illegally, say you're a woman and your male guardian does not know about it. Once you stop at a well yeah once you stop at a transit point, they're gonna know by that time, and they're gonna have the authorities informed, and they're gonna try to get you back. And the reason that so many people get sent back from Southeast Asia is, I think, primarily because so the only like developed first world country that Saudi citizens do not need a visa to enter is New Zealand, and there are
Okay.
no direct flights from Saudi Arabia to New Zealand, so you're gonna have to stop somewhere in Southeast Asia. Otherwise, you're going to have to wait several weeks for a visa. And so yeah, if we can take this as an example, and maybe look at Thailand as a safe spot, that could be an amazing thing, because for a very long time, those Saudis in very bad positions, and as I told you before, I was almost one of them. I have very few options,
Yeah,
so.
I don't think Thailand is a safe spot. Like the, I'm pretty sure if there wasn't any, it wasn't the amount of publicity that she got,
Yeah,
they would have sent her back. I mean,
yeah.
I even heard an
I'm
interview
not
with.
necessarily saying. I mean, yeah. They definitely would have sent her back, like if there wasn't a lot of attention to it. But I think that this precedent definitely helps. If like it helps a lot with future cases. Like if you have to stop somewhere, if you need to go right now, if you're a Saudi national, you don't have a visa to another country, you want to go to New Zealand right this moment, it's good to know that because of this precedent, Thailand is probably going to be safer than the other options, and we're not just shooting in the dark.
Until they block that as well. Did you hear the Saudi one of the ministers saying that we should have taken away her phone? Did you see that clip?
Yes, I saw that one.
So
And
I'm
it's just what makes it even more I guess funny or outrageous is that was after they like denied on public Saudi state television having taken her passport. Like the on state television in Saudi Arabia, they publicly stated that they did not take away her passport.
Wow.
And yeah, just blatant
Hilarious.
lying is
Yeah.
yeah.
So, I posted your channel again. I'm gonna have it in the description.
Thank you.
And the Twitter as well. Is there anything else you want to add just before we end?
No, I think this is all good.
Okay, so everyone, I've been speaking with Zach Abdul Razak. He's in Germany, Berlin, and he is you can catch him on Twitter at hold on a second. It's Zach ZACAALRAYYIS, and I will post a link to his YouTube channel as well, and you can keep in touch with him, and let's see what happens. Looking forward to a happy ending to this story.
And if anyone here is in Berlin, just tell us right now.
And I just want to say, just be careful to people that offer you advice and help, and you know, obviously, just be careful where you meet. Meet in public places and stuff like that. Just be careful of people that are offering you help. Just you know, like maybe come with somebody else or something. And
yeah, especially if it's in the Saudi consulate.
Right? Don't go to the Saudi consulate. Oh my goodness. Okay, so it's been a wrap. Thank you, everyone. For more from me, also please do subscribe to the channel and check out my blog at abdullahsamir.com. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, Zach.
Okay, thank you very much.